Hello, my guest today is Nikki Abraham, a lawyer by trade with strong opinions on what works in leadership. She has applied these principles into her own business and now is building a platform on which to share her thoughts on how to challenge the status quo and drive the ownership mindset within teams. I found our conversation fascinating, and I'm sure you will do too. Welcome to the Transformation Leaders podcast, Nikki. It's great that you could join me today. I'm keen to explore your experience within a sector that we haven't really spoken about that much on the podcast to date. So, and how your leadership style and beliefs have developed because of it. But before we get into the detail, just explain a little bit about who you are, introduce yourself, let the audience know more about your background and your career to date.
I describe myself as a legal entrepreneur. I have had an unconventional path through law. It's been quite an entrepreneurial journey because the main thread that I guess runs through my career is that I never wanted to be a traditional lawyer. So I sought to transform, I guess, the perception and the practice of the role, particularly in my younger days. So I would go into bigger organizations from day one, really, to build employment and discrimination departments. That's my background. By trade, I'm an employment and discrimination lawyer. And at the time, it wasn't a practice area in its own right. It was kind of annexed to commercial law. But I really saw its scope to grow and thought that it had potential to be this vehicle for societal change. And it is, and it was. So in building those, that meant a rejection of the conventional. It meant that I wasn't taking on the roles in commercial law that were offered to me, that had a really delineated career path and a very specific time frame in terms of that upward trajectory. It was predictable. Put a business plan on the table and sought to collaborate with the organizations I was in so that we could build the department, we could really enhance the service and be that trusted advisor for our clients. And it was, I mean, if I'm honest, I was very motivated by the notion of working with agency and autonomy and really being in charge of the architecture of my job role in collaboration with the firm and, in, you know, to align my own vision, my own strengths with those of the firm. So it was a very entrepreneurial journey in that sense. And I started my own firm with my business partner 10 years ago. It's a commercial law firm in London. And there we sought to really work in a collaborative way. You know, in our own world, both myself and my business partner had experienced lawyers in the same firm that were competing with one another. You know, the clients were currency. So they would look at their own billing, be really possessive over clients. We thought that was at cross purposes with what the client needed. We wanted to be their trusted advisor and surround them with everything they needed, really get into the bone of their business. And we did that and worked closely alongside them. But also, it has always been important to us to reshape the way we took people on. So to align the technical skill with people who had a diversity in journeys and experiences and have those essential skills and character traits, that would mean that they could serve each other and clients with empathy, with commerciality. And that's really what I think has enriched the organization and looking in a wider sense, what enriches organizations generally. But I've transformed, if we want to keep into the, you know, the subject matter of this podcast, I've transformed as a leader a lot. I have led in a very top-down way in the earlier days, you know, been very, very specific about how to run cases, how to build the department. And I think doing that have led through inspiration in a way, because I was so passionate about what I was doing, but that only gets you so far. That can serve to stifle people. So I've really evolved in being from that to being an empowerer, an enabler, enabling relationships and people's progression and their journeys to now where I'm not so involved in doing the day-to-day lawyering and the deep operations of the firm, but I'm speaking a lot about the bigger concepts. How do we shape the workforce of the future in a way that fits our world the world we're in and the world we're going into? And how do we really work in a way that invigorates us and that provides us with significance of work? Because we all deserve that. And most importantly, how do organizations cultivate that in a way that allows individuals and organizations to flourish? So the focus really is on sharing journeys and using that as a platform to inspire others and also to answer these fundamental questions that I've really become obsessed with.
It's a fascinating introduction and lots for us to delve into as we progress through the episode today. Interestingly, I've worked in legal world a little bit myself and also in professional services. And the transformation that you have attempted to put into that sector is fascinating. And again, I think we'll explore a little bit deeper into that as we go through the episode. But before we do, always start off with the one same question on every podcast. How do you define transformation? How would you respond to that?
That is a big question. It's a big word. But it's one that, I mean, it's always had positive connotations for me. It's the grand metamorphosis of whether it's people, organizations, and it's for the betterment of those organizations and those people. It can be, that can lead to all sorts of improvements in, I don't know, efficiencies, operations. It can be as drastic as breathing new life into a failing organization. It's something that it's bold and intentional. It can mean different things to different people and organizations, but it's most definitely exciting. I think, you know, looking at it in different contexts, whether it's in business, individuals, looking at it in a really big context, the most exciting transformation for me at the moment is what's happening in our world. The fact that we can connect on the subject of vision, on purpose, and we can do that in a global scale is the most fascinating transformation that I think is happening, because it's impacting business, how we do business is impacting how we connect with each other. You know, I've described my journey to some extent, but it really mirrors the fact that I'm not bound by jurisdiction anymore, because I'm not in the sort of deep down lawyering. I am in a place where I can share those concepts and look at the social impact that I'm having, and we all can. It's providing that globalized view in a way where the old rules applicable to business, to people, to how we communicate, they don't have to apply in our sort of current world of this, you know, democratization of ideas and concepts. And I think that's incredibly exciting, and it bleeds into every area of what we're doing.
Yeah, it's interesting, like you say, that the fact that you took that approach into probably one of the most traditional industries out there, law, and started on that transformation journey at a very early age, I think is really inspirational, in so much that you've looked at something and said, actually, that's not what I want to do. That's not how I see the future. But instead of sitting back and letting things happen, you've actually moved into it. You've leaned into it and tried to drive that change from within. You say something on your LinkedIn profile that you are passionate about challenging the status quo. And it sounds like you've done that all the way through your career. Where does that come from? Where did that sort of challenging mindset come from? Is that something that you've always had, or just, it'd be interesting just to explore the background to that sort of mindset, which lots of people might have the feeling that things need to change, but it's one thing having the thoughts of needing to change, but then actually leaning into it and doing something about it. That's where you differ.
If I look at my background, is I've had a very entrepreneurial influence from my parents. My dad came to the country from Cyprus, and he obviously tiny island, and he did various jobs. But during my sort of childhood, we lived through them owning a fish and chip shop, a hairdressing shop, and we were all part of that journey, the highs and the lows. They didn't hide much from us. And that was anxiety inducing at some points, but it was a great learning journey. And also all of the experiences that we had. I've developed a leadership lessons series, and that really is about applying life lessons. We've all got this incredible bank of wisdom, and that can come from all of our past experiences, our journeys, and that's what leads to a diversity in journey and wisdom. The knowledge of the job and the technical, we can acquire that. I don't think I learned that much from law school. You know, my learning really from that professional technical point of view started from day one of being in the workforce and interacting with people. But that notion of how do we serve clients, go above and beyond, that commerciality, that entrepreneurialism was all things that I bought from my childhood growing up. Yeah, I'd had little, you know, I'd had jobs, I'd had holiday jobs. I worked in loads of places. I worked in my dad's hairdressing shop, in a place Virgin used to have a bridal store. I was there. I worked in banks, you know, so many different jobs. But the first leadership lessons that I wrote from the series was called Leadership Lessons from a Greek Cypriot Kitchen. And that was about applying the principles of hospitality to work and leadership. And as I thought about, I really went through the visual of a Sunday morning at my house. And that involved this team effort, which was myself and my older sisters all preparing this massive meal, because we would have loads of people around our house on most weekends. So there was this preparation. One of us is chopping onions, the other one's folding napkins, the other one's stirring the bechamel sauce, mum's in charge. And this was all with the view of really presenting best version of our home to the guests that were coming to our house on a Sunday. So I'm reflecting on that. It was really important to us how those people felt when they came to our homes. And it's a great visual to explain how I felt when I went into the workforce. I understood immediately the concept of client service. And that's going above and beyond. If they were coming to my home, which was the office at that time, we were having a meeting, I would go above and beyond. I would go above and beyond when I was providing legal services. And that wasn't just about explaining the law to them, fighting the discrimination, dismissal, unfair dismissal cases, whistleblowing, whatever it was. That was more about the holistic service that I was providing. And law, particularly back then, that notion that it's a profession and you're an officer of the court, people can misinterpret that to say, no, we're kind of above that. You know, some people regarded the going out to get your clients, that talking about the client service and the importance of it as being almost beneath us. And I never understood that. I immediately wanted to apply that full service to clients, and I wanted to serve them in the way that my family and I had served those Sunday guests. And it's difficult to teach and explain that. And that's why it's so important that we bring that diversity of experience with us into the workplace, and we don't have such a stark division between what we regard in our personal life and our professional life. You know, that we use one platform to enhance and enrich the other. And there are so many life lessons that we can take. And that's what I say when I speak to Gen Zers at universities. That's one of the things that I say. I go into the detail of these stories. I did the leadership lessons from Italian pizzeria in Naples, which was all about balancing innovation and tradition. The fact that you don't have to be shackled by what's come before. You can use it to enrich your experiences going forward and to innovate, to make those new pizza bases and to open the new pizza stands in New York. And that was, you know, when talking to Gen Zers or people that have never occupied a boss position, it's to say you can use all those lessons, you can use all of that wisdom to understand what's needed and what's applicable to work, to leadership, to how to treat other people. And that's more important than ever now in the world that we're in and the world that we're going into. And that's why I talk about it in the context of future workforce.
Right, and I think the again, a key message there is around the the skill of storytelling and the real benefit of positioning what you're trying to do in a story. Because fundamentally, all we're trying to do when we go through any organizational change is to take people on a journey. And if we can position that journey around a story and get people engaged in that story, people are much more likely to come on the journey with us and lean into that change, as opposed to leaning back and feeling that change is being done to them. That storytelling approach is a proven way of taking people on a journey.
Yeah, I love Simon Sinek, and I love all of his theories around the why. But as you say, it's so incredibly important to take people on that journey. And again, related back to the subject matter of the podcast, you look at the components, the ingredients of any successful transformation. One of them has got to be the why, the taking people on the journey. And that's not just aligning the critical people in an organization to the transformation effort, but it's really explaining the journey. Why do we need to do things differently? And why is it so important? You know, it's not just outcomes driven. It's taking people on that journey. And that all of the things that, you know, we're talking about in terms of the life lessons, it's really about people feeling a belonging and having that notion that, you know, they have that personal stake in the success and the well-being of any organization. And as I say, that is more important than ever. All of the concepts that I became obsessed with these questions that I've mentioned before, the future workforce and the how do we feel invigorated and significant at work. Because I realized that all the concepts I was coming up with were in answer to those questions. It was almost a reverse of how you're meant to ask the question and then answer. I was kind of answering and then figuring out what questions I was trying to answer. Why is it so important that we work with agency and autonomy and that we look to architect our own roles? Why is it that we lean into it's so important that we work outside of our comfort zone, that we lean into what I call our preferred discomfort, because that leads to that growth and that invigoration. And that's why we need to keep things changing and fresh. Why is it important that we have that multilingual, adaptable response to every issue that comes up? To work and to leadership, so that we can be understood by people that are from different backgrounds, and so that we can figure out what type of leader, what type of innovator, what type of disruptor do we want to be, trying those different hats. I mean, it's all of those criteria are crucial for the world that we're in today and align with how we need to apply ourselves to any kind of change or transformation.
So Nikki, it's interesting when you were saying about the whole concept of taking people on the journey, being clear about the why, and as you say, that emphasis of allowing people within your team to lean in and be innovative and come up with ideas and try different things. A lot of people in bigger organizations in particular, especially when they are younger or less experienced, probably have a fear of taking the initiative because they'll probably get slapped down because of the old style approach. Going right back to the start of your journey in that law firm, which will be really, I suspect, a very traditional mindset, very traditional law firm sort of environment, you leaning in, saying you want to do things differently. I'm assuming, again, it's probably wrong to assume, but I'm assuming that it wasn't, oh, yes, of course, Nikki, you come in and do whatever you want. There would have been some resistance. So what type of resistance did you face and how did you overcome that to allow you to move forward? I think that's a real key lesson people can apply in every organization.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right to assume, and you've clearly got knowledge of the sort of conventional legal world that I came from. And there was resistance from particularly from some of the partners. I went in as a younger lawyer and, you know, it was all about how much experience have you got, because that was meant to dictate the hierarchical structure, who you're answerable to, and what you did. This is what you're supposed to be at 3 years qualification. This is what you're supposed to be at 5 years qualification. I'm so against that notion. I always was. So some of the resistance was, no, these are my clients. I need to hug them tight. This is my sort of currency if I go anywhere in the world. And because part of it was, look, I need to tap into that, because we can provide them with employment, workforce services, as well as commercial, as well as property. All of those things can help the client. And there was such archaic practices going on. You know, one of the things I've spoken about at length were these, the requirement to network and build business was part of my job from day one because of the building of these departments. Back then, they didn't call them this, but there were male-only events where, you know, we used to go to various sporting events, rugby, horse racing. And there was one event that was only attended by men. And when you looked at the list of CEOs, you know, organization owners who were attending, they were all the decision makers. So I approached it with a very business-like view, but also, you know, with the background notion, this is completely unfair. It's frankly discriminatory. But I approached it with the notion that actually I'm here to build business, and therefore I need to attend those events. I also wanted to pave the way for other women to attend, and I succeeded in doing that. But it was done in a very practical, very, very sort of in my daily business way. But I have to mention also that although it was met with that resistance, I was working collaboratively with whatever practice I was at in order to align it with the company's vision. And I was very fortunate in that I was given the space to do that. I had put the business plan on the table. I had put forward the arguments and the reasoning for why this would enrich the firm, but I was given that space. And I think when we're looking at different organizations and how they support people, it's so important that, you know, and I think now more than ever, there is lots around this, the importance of building those values that bind people together. That's important at a high level point of view. And also the actionable principles that underpin that. Because the stronger those pillars, if you understand those pillars and you understand the values, the more people feel comfortable to maneuver within those pillars. So if you understand the direction of the company, now if you look at the massive companies, the Googles, the Amazons, you know, Google, for instance, the main, one of the actionable principles is that the user comes first and the rest will follow. You can see the direction that that's taken. They've got brilliant web-based products. But with any organization, it's important to ascertain what are the values, what are the principles, and then to feel free within those principles to act with innovation, to go forward and to look at your job role. How can I tweak that? How can I change that to align with those things? I mean, there are of course organizations that are better than others in building mechanisms, even in that sort of very, very rigid way to engender that type of culture. Again, looking at those big companies, the Googles, the Amazons, all of those build into their daily practices, they embed those transformation principles from the time that they recruit people to how they remunerate them to performance evaluation. And it's full circle. That those mechanisms build that culture. But for anyone going into any organization, it's important to look at what's there, what are the pillars, and how can I fit in? How can I build my diverse wisdom, experience, journey, skills, character traits to complement all of those things, and to collaborate and to be very clear about how that enriches both themselves and the organization.
Yeah, I think that's the key message, though, isn't it? It's what you did very effectively is challenge the status quo, absolutely, but you did it through the lens of the partners. So what's in it for the partner? What are they looking for? What would they want from their client relationships? Could we, you know, can I help them to get what they want? And I think that's a key message. If you can, if you're driving transformation, when you're engaging with critical stakeholders, get a real understanding of what's important to them and look through whatever you're trying to do through their lens. And it's really insightful. And you can just tailor messages or tailor approaches to fit in to their lens, and they become a supporter and advocate and push you along. Where initially, and if you don't do that, and where there's initial resistance, if you don't do that and you just keep pushing a message, a one-size-fits-all message, all too often you just end up getting a lot more resistance.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, what's the company? It's a collection of individuals. So if those individuals are invigorated and they're engaged, then that can only lead to a more successful organization. You know, I don't normally quote neuroscience because I've got no business doing that. I'm not qualified in any way. But there is, like, I came across this study. I heard it in a podcast, I haven't read her book yet. Tali Sharot, Dr. Tali Sharot. She's a neuroscientist, and she was looking at how do you elicit joy? You know, what creates happiness from people? And they did this study. They questioned loads of people, and number one on the list was purpose. Yeah. The why of doing something is integral. Number two was that change, the importance of forward motion, change, that leads to invigoration, joy. I think social connection was quite high up and income was actually quite low. So if you take that as an organization, you know, I think people are more in tune than ever, and organizations are, that people are not, you know, we're beyond the realms of everyone wanting the same upward trajectory, the same career path. So need to work with people to figure out where do they want to go and how does that benefit the organization? Is it a sideways move? How can we enable and enhance their learning and development? And how can we create an environment, a safe to fail environment, where we support them in leaning into those preferred discomforts? Because that, again, that actually breeds a wider collective adaptability type of culture. And that's what you want, and that's what you need. In this, we're in an era of volatility is the only way I can describe it. It's the pace of change, I can see, is quicker than ever. I mean, I talk about things 2 weeks ago. I look at things that I've spoken about 2 weeks ago, and they already feel outdated a fortnight later, because I've had conversations, I've spoken to people, I've gone out into the world, I've done business, and I'm constantly updating. Who knows what I'll be speaking about in, you know, by the end of the year. The pace of change is so quick, and that's in every respect. I mean, I looked at a study the other day. Yeah, it was a McKinsey study, and I posted about this. It said that by 2030, one in 16 people will have to shift their occupations globally. One in 16 people, because their job roles would have become obsolete. So that study looked at the quiet hiring that's going on, as in the matrix of skills that organizations are looking at, as opposed to the matrix of job titles, job roles. Yeah. Matrix of skills and character traits that are going to be transferable to different roles. So it's so important that we change that perception of fixed job role, and that we develop those tools of adaptability, working outside our comfort zone, and being multilingual in our approach to things, and that organizations support people to do that. Otherwise, where is it going to go? Because people won't be able to adapt to those different environments. And if I look at my own background in a very in a very conventional way. All of those things have only served me well. Those peripheral skills, those peripheral character traits are now central to what I'm doing and to what people will be doing. You know, so that's the gold dust that we shouldn't miss out on.
I don't have the stats to hand, but something I read probably about 3 or 4 years ago now, so it massively out of date. But then it was saying, I think it was something like 40% of the jobs back at the point. So this would probably be about 2020, something like that. So like 40% of jobs that people are working at that point didn't exist 20 years previously. Yeah. And if you think about the rate of, and the speed of change since then, you know, you fast forward 5 years, a big proportion of jobs that we'll all be doing in 5 years' time don't exist at the moment. And it, having that mindset that actually, yes, we're in this environment of constant change, you can react in two ways. You can be afraid by it and step back, or you can lean into it and see the opportunities that change is going to create. And it's a mindset. And I think, to be fair, a lot of the younger population has got that mindset. They're not looking for life anymore. Let's look at the opportunities and take advantage of those opportunities as they stand now. But there is this sort of crossover, isn't there, between the generations, where a lot of the people that are older are leading organizations are of that fixed mindset, where a lot of the new entrants coming into the organizations are of that growth mindset, and there's a clash. And over the next five, maybe up to 10 years, that clash is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And the people that can adapt, the people that can change, the people that can embrace those opportunities will thrive.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm, you know, there's lots wrong in the world, but I'm incredibly optimistic about what we can learn from the younger generation. I happen to attend a leadership dialogue roundtable about multi-generational leadership, and this was part of an organization called Common Purpose. I went to Mumbai with them in last June to address the question, how are we going to get the workforce of the future? And I'm now part of their advisory group for London. So we had this conversation about multi-generational leadership. And one of the things that came out of that was, what can we learn from this fantastic mindset that the younger generation have? I mean, there's lots of criticism around it, loads of stereotypical assumptions. But when I've spoken to universities, one of the things that I say is, you know, I feel like I've always had a Gen Z head on my aging shoulders, because in whatever world I was in, I wanted to disrupt and I wanted to innovate. And how lucky are you guys, because the world is ready for you to do that. You know, people are open to that. Organizations are open to that. They're seeking to engender that. So it's a great time for you. And not to feel bound by what they consider to be conventional industries. I mean, all of that will evolve. But, you know, going into the legal industry now looks very different to what it did 20 years ago. And there is no option other than all those industries and businesses to evolve, otherwise they will be left behind. You know, it's not just looking at AI and technology and automation and the pace with which that's moving, and the fact that we really have to reshape and organize things almost around that. One of the most important thing we have to reshape is mindset. That leads everything. That leads operation. That leads how we engage people. That leads processes. You know, all of those things have to work around the technology. So that's why I'm so focused on this, because it's so important. I feel it's my responsibility to share the journey I've been on. And I hate the term personal branding, but actually it's what I'm doing. I'm feeling that I want to share these concepts and these ideas, however I do it, social media, podcasts, out there and speaking on stage. And I think that it's so important that those with experience, those coming in fresh with new innovative ideas, do that, that we all share, because we don't know what's around the corner.
Exactly. No, I think it's a critical message, and I agree that it is mindset, and it's mindset at every level within an organization. And bringing it back to sort of the topic of the podcast around sort of organizational transformation, I always say, but the first thing you've got to get when you're looking at a transformation is absolute clarity around the vision, or what I call North Star. What are we trying to move towards? But actually, before then, you've got to get your mindset right. You've got to get your mindset that says, actually, yes, we can take advantage of these opportunities. We can bring all these ideas. We can help people to embrace the concept of moving forward, all the things to really build up momentum within an organization. That in many instances needs a mindset change. So I probably need to refresh by my approach to say it starts with mindset, and then that mindset change will drive forward a much clearer vision that we can then start to build a business around and the operation and the transformation around.
Yeah. I mean, the starkest, I think you're not alone in sort of really trying to rethink that process and the order of things and what drives what. One of the starkest examples of that, I mentioned that I went to Mumbai with a common purpose in June to address this issue: how are we going to shape the workforce of the future? And Mumbai was such an exciting classroom, and it blew my mind over the course of that week, because I was going to massive organizations, from JLL to Tata, to government agencies, to night schools, not-for-profit night schools for adults and children who were working during the day and being educated at night. There was a national unity in everyone's vision and approach, because the demographic is different from some other country. Demographic is there are a lot of young people, so loads of resources being pumped into education and bridging that gap between education and skills and work. But that unified energy of, we want to move forward, we want to progress, we want to be an economic superpower, we're ready to work and to drive towards that. What does it take and what does that mean? There was that unity which transcended everything else. That was underpinned by people speaking about wanting to work with ownership and agency, wanting to craft their own job roles, wanting to be innovative and experimental in their approach. Young, old, junior, senior, whatever the hierarchical structure, everyone was saying that, but they were unified by this, I'll call it a common purpose, which is the name of that not-for-profit organization. And that was so impactful. I was re-energized by that to no end. And I came back really wanting to not forget that feeling and that messaging. It's so important that, we look at how are we unified? But how can we bring ourselves and our individuality to that journey, so that we all feel that personal stake, but that we're all working collaboratively and together to get to where we're going?
Yeah, and ultimately, if you can, within an organization, if you can breed that type of environment, that type of culture, performance is going to go through the roof, because everybody wants to make an impact. If you can position people in a role where they feel that they can enjoy, that they feel that they can make an impact, that they feel that they can lean into, they will perform much higher than if you put them in a role that they're not suitable for. Basic stuff. But how many times when you look at an organization, the wrong people are in the wrong roles? And it's so basic, but Yeah, it's I suppose that's what gives us the opportunities to go in and help organizations change and transform. If everyone was perfect, they wouldn't need us, would they? But
change. We talk about it like it's this thing that we just do, and it's, you know, it's difficult. It's not easy. And I believe that we all have an appetite for change, for this preferred discomfort that I'm talking about. This intentional drive to change things for the betterment of things and to lead to something better and to grow and to progress, to evolve. I think we all have an appetite for that. And, you know, but that's not to say it's not without its challenges. But if you are supported and if you have this culture of collective adaptability, you start to let go of these barriers, these shackles. I mean, there's been so many in my own journey where I've really struggled. I really struggled, for example, in letting go. And I want to refer to myself as a control freak exactly, but that notion of empowering others meant that I had to let go and get out of the way a bit. And to do that, I really had to have a word with myself and to look at what's going to benefit the organization, what's going to enable other people's journeys. And once you do that, you grow as an individual, everyone else grows because you're not in the way. And they feel the freedom and the space to put themselves into it. No one likes being told what to do. So if you can create a safe environment for people to grow and do that, it's so beneficial for everyone concerned. And that's one of the examples of a difficult change that I think that a lot of us can relate to. It's one of the practices that I list when I think, how can we exercise these preferred discomforts? We talk about facing fears. We talk about, you know, and the other thing of letting go from your knowledge area, even not needing to be the perennial expert in everything that you do.
Yep.
And that resonates, you know, when I'm stepping away, when I'm looking at how can I answer these big questions that I've put forward, these about future workforce, about how we can have significance from work. That means really delving into a different area. I have all the legal knowledge, but it's delving into looking to the future and also showing some vulnerability in using examples from my own journey, which I would have had difficulty in doing that 5 years ago. But it's led to growth, and it's led to that, you know, having that impact on other people and leading in a different way.
It's interesting coming back to what you were just saying about stepping back and allowing the team the freedom to develop in the way that they want to develop. It takes me back to the very first episode of the Transformation Leaders podcast, and Christoph, who was the very first guest, talked about the concept of focusing on outcomes, not outputs. And a lot of leaders will say, okay, we want you to do this. This is your job and this is how you do it. So very focused on outputs. And it's like, well, no, let's forget about how you go about it. What we want from you is this outcome. And how you get to that outcome, it's completely up to you. Within boundaries, obviously, but breaking the boundaries, but being really clear on the outcomes is the way you can really drive massive performance improvements, massive impact upon the individual's abilities and experiences and confidence to really achieve massive amounts of uplifting performance. But all too often, people focus on outputs, not outcomes. We tend to finish all of the episodes with one final question, and it's, what's your non-negotiable? What's the one sort of takeaway that you want people to leave with from this episode?
I think, you know, we've touched on it a number of times, but it is that the importance of ownership and agency. It's referred to it as the ownership culture, but it's really to cover everything that we've spoken about, that importance of creating space even if it's microspaces for people to exercise and bring to the table all of their individual experiences, their wisdoms, all of that diversity and journey. It's important to align that, as I've mentioned before, with the goals of the organizations and their visions with those of the organization. And however we cultivate that, we need, and I suggest values, principles, building those mechanisms, those embedding those transformative principles within the day-to-day. All of that is so important. That's what will drive people forward. And that aligns directly with the main components of successful transformation.
Brilliant way to end the podcast. Thank you very much, Nikki, for your time and your insights. And if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way of contacting you?
Thanks so much for having me, Tony. First of all, thank you. I've loved that conversation over the last however long that's been, that flew past. I think it's been 50 minutes or so, but this is a massive topic. So I was really excited to come on. So my website is just Nikki Avram. Nikki with 1K, Nikki, avram.com. And that's really where I live. That's my home. And that's where people can come and find me for keynote speaking engagements or the workshops that I run around those main pillars, some of which we've touched upon, the bringing the life lessons, the ownership culture, the preferred discomforts, and the importance of being agile as opposed to rigid and being multilingual in our approach to work and leadership. But that's all to be found there, and also on the main social media platforms. So I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram mainly.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Nikki. What a fascinating conversation. The time just flew by. Please do leave a comment and subscribe so that you can be the first to know of future episodes that we'll be releasing in the next few weeks. Thanks for listening. See you soon.